Hey everyone, I am doing my best to drop my podcasts weekly, either on Wednesday or Thursdays. So I am making a new episode now. I had an opportunity to speak with someone via email back and forth, and her name is Risha, and she wanted to come on and tell her story. There's a lot to it. A lot of it's, you know, like I normally do, just kind of off the cuff and everything else. We had a really genuine, good conversation. And I really enjoy reaching out to other people and speaking to other people about what they're going through. I feel it to be kind of helpful for, you know, multiple reasons, for, you know, my own health, my own healing, others' healing and growth, and just relatable. You know, sometimes we just want to hear that we're not alone. And this is Risha's story. Thank you guys.
Oh, so I mean, let's jump into it.
Okay. I consider myself to be an awful storyteller, so I'm not real. I am kind of neurotic, but I'm like, all right, I'll write down some notes. And it's the first time I've tried to write it all down. It was an experience in itself, I suppose.
Right. Like notes are helpful for sure. But yeah, I guess for at least this episode / you know, discussion, it's just kind of laying out your story.
Yeah. Okay. I'm probably close to 5 years in to starting to realize what I was dealing with. But it's so gradual. I feel like the more I've learned about, you know, people who have been in relationships with narcissists, especially in relationships with marriage and with kids, that it kind of goes one of two ways. You have those people who are discarded, and you know, that's its own situation. I was not discarded. It was me kind of slowly putting these pieces together, and then it took me a while to have the, you know, have the strength to decide, okay, like this really, really isn't going to get any better. Which I think is kind of what your story has been as well. It takes a while.
Oh yeah.
I started to think about red flags. You know, it was immediate that I was seeing these things. Cause I mean, I don't know about you, but I didn't have any experience. And I remember having this conversation with my mom a couple of years ago too. Like, I don't feel like I have any experience with this type of person. I didn't know this type of person existed.
Right.
Like, I don't feel like I didn't come from an abusive home. And I know they say that's, you know, that a lot of that, you know, that can lead you to make decisions that land you in these situations. But
right.
I didn't come from that kind of situation. And I think I definitely see the best in people. Which maybe that's half my problem.
Yeah, I think I'm with you on that. I think that, you know, I see, you know, the best in people, and I see like the softer side, and then it's like, oh, you know, there's potential. There's things to, you know, they just need to unleash this or unlock this certain potential, and then, you know, that can kind of carry over. I guess it's like a fixer mentality for me, you know.
Yeah, that you know. Like everybody deserves forgiveness, and you know, you're always trying to explain away why they behave this way. So then you're going to be forgiving. And then next thing you know, you wake up and you realize what you've done.
Then you're way too deep into it to just like pick up and leave at that point, you know?
Yes. I mean, I left when my kids were 1 and 3. So I wasn't that deep into it. I think I was probably at that point, probably 5 years into the relationship, when I decided to leave. But you know, with small kids, it's its own. I mean, I think a lot of people thought I was out of my mind, but.
Did you leave your children with him, or did you bring them with you?
I did not have the ability to leave. So when I actually went So I started, I don't know, probably 6 months before I actually physically left the family home. I had contacted a lawyer and kind of started putting my ducks in order. And when it was a couple months actually before I was hoping to leave, things got a lot worse, to the point, and I covered up a lot of things that I called the police one night, which was the first time that I'd ever done that. And after that, I decided I had to leave. Like, my lawyer had advised me not to leave the family home because of, you know, your legal rights to the property and all that. There was no way in hell he was going to let me take the children out of the house.
Right.
So, you know, I negotiated back and forth with him, and I pretty much gave up all of my rights to leave. I said, you know, I would get every other weekend while we're still working this out. And he allowed me to have dinners with the kids because I think it made it easier for him two nights a week.
Oh yeah. Anything that's going to benefit them, they'll be like, oh, could you do this? You know?
Mm-hmm. Yes. I mean, I was perfectly fine to have them overnight when it was convenient for him.
Right.
But, you know, other than that, it wasn't a good environment. But yeah, I had to leave without them. So I got every other weekend, and I think that lasted for like 2.5 months, that it was every other weekend and then a couple nights a week. And that was really hard. My 3-year-old, my daughter, and she's probably a lot more attached to him. She's kind of his golden child, which has its own set of concerns for me. And then the 1-year-old was very attached to me, and that was really, really hard. But ultimately, you know, within a couple months with negotiating with lawyers, we were able to get 50-50. So that's where we are now. We've been there for 2 years maybe. And we have this weird rotating schedule because the kids can't be without seeing him for more than 3 days at a time. He believes it's not, you know, they need to see him. It's very important for the kids. So if we have this bizarre rotating schedule.
Now, have they said that, or that's just what he's kind of conned the courts into believing, or?
He didn't really. I mean, we settled. So the court, it was me just signing it and saying, okay, fine, if this is what it's going to take. You know, I think, you know, you said it and other people that you get, like Trish was saying, that you just want out.
Yeah.
Like, and in retrospect, like, I do think I could have fought a lot harder. At the same time, I don't know how much more I would have gotten, because I think, you know, where I live is a state that favors 50-50. There's really no documented reason besides, like, I have chains of emails that seem insane and some behaviors, but it's really hard, I think, to show a court that, you know, someone is emotionally abusive.
Right.
And my kids are young too, so they're really compliant, which I think helps him. When they're teenagers, I'm really nervous.
I'm still stuck. Like, I feel like there's so many cases where there is so much coercion and manipulation and trying to trap the other parent and screenshot, you know, threats, you know, screenshot, I'm going to send that to my lawyer now, you know, that kind of stuff, to where it's like, how are the courts still just looking over this? How are, like, the laws still not, you know, putting something into effect in the United States that like, this is an issue, like, this is a topic of something that needs to, I don't know. It just,
well, no, you're right. There is that. So in the UK, they've got coercive control on the books now, but it's on a bill right now. I don't remember where I read it, but it's on a bill right now, for in the US.
Good.
Who knows how long that's going to take, but it's somewhere.
They're going to really, like, look into, I feel like, you know, even when I got my restraining order, you know, type situation, it was still just like all circling around violence, you know, and she's been violent, but that's not her MO. You know, that's just like, you know, that's the physical proof that I had evidence of that was, you know, pretty much just the surface level stuff. That wasn't like the emotional abuse and the verbal abuse and everything else is the things that sting 10 times more. Like, you can smack me. I mean, that didn't bother me other than like, oh, I got a mark. Now I can prove something for the courts. Like,
no, I will say, like, I honestly, I thought it multiple times and I know he knew it too. I mean, it was all just, they know where the boundary is. If they're too physical with you, then they've gone too far. Like, right. He'd get in my face and be pressing his forehead against me. And I knew if I touched him, he would then claim that I started it, right. Which was how many of it. So then I would do nothing.
Right.
I mean, they know where the line is. And
locking doors. I can't even imagine, like, the forehead, putting the forehead up against
it. Oh, it's the worst, like, against your face. It's just, like, there's
awful. It's just
such an asshole move. I can swear, right?
Yeah. I mean, sure, you've heard me swear.
Yes, I have. Okay, all right. But, yeah, I don't know. I have hope, I guess, that maybe. But then realistically, when you think about it, how... I've had this conversation with my mom as well. She doesn't understand why the courts can't, like, why aren't they looking at these things more closely? But then you think about the amount of time and money it would take to really understand what right. goes on in these relationships. I don't know. I don't know if it's ever realistically possible.
Yeah.
Which sucks.
Yeah. Yeah. And you can't, this isn't something you can just do a nutshell version of. You can't, like, because they could pick a reactive abuse situation where you've reacted to things that they've done.
Absolutely.
And be like, oh, look at this, you know? I mean, and so if it's a nutshell version, it's just basically like, okay, well, you said some horrible shit. Let's just keep it 50-50. Like, is it going to make a difference at that point? Unless you, like, are willing to spend $80,000 and, you know, like, just really nail it to somebody. But I mean, so tell me about the beginning. Like, start the where did you meet this person? I mean, how did it develop into what it was, you know?
So we worked in the same school district. We're both teachers. It's funny because he worked at the lower school than I did. And I remember, you know, in the beginning, first year students, you know, they don't know what's going on. But I'm dealing with high school kids, so they're always watching, like, did you pull in this car? Like, they know, eventually they notice that people are having conversations. And I just remember it was this really strange lesson. I don't know if you're familiar with Machiavelli, the prince, is that, like, it's better to be, what is it? It's better to be hated or feared than hated. It's better to be feared than loved.
Right.
And I was doing this lesson with the kids on Machiavelli. They read this passage and I'm saying to them, I'm like, can you think of a person who is like this? A lot of teachers might be like this sometimes where they prefer to be feared than liked by students because it allows them to control. And one of the students gave his name and I laughed it off. I was like, ah, and I'm not making this up. This actually happened. And several kids were like, yeah. And
that was the first year we were dating. Was like junior high, you were high school, or
yes, exactly.
So they had him in previous years, and like, of course, they like pinpoint to that guy. Mm-hmm. And had you seen those types of things at that point?
Not really. No, I.
He was still in the love bombing phase.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's all. So, yeah, it was definitely in the love bombing phase. And I also think it's, you know, you always like take it with a grain of salt. Like the kids are, sometimes they're overly dramatic about a teacher. No, they were right. Those 14-year-old kids were right. But yeah, it became relationshipy, I think, pretty fast compared to, you know, my history. And I don't know. It just kind of happened very quickly and it seemed okay. And then I did notice, I think, you know, that there were things that were off when we'd get into arguments. I'd only been in one previous longer term relationship prior to that. And, you know, he'd constantly throw that back at me like, well, you don't really have a lot of experience. And he was like 6-7 years older than me as well. I mean, I wasn't that young. I was in my late 20s, but, you know, he'd always be like, well, you don't have a lot of experience. So this is how it is. And I remember the first time he called me names, and no one had ever called me, like literally no one in my life had ever called me, like maybe on the playground when I was like six, but I don't like no one I loved has ever like labeled me as something. They might really be mad at my behavior in a moment. Totally fine.
Right.
Yeah. The first time he called me names, I left. I was at his house. I got in my car and I'm like, nope. And I left, and I clearly had boundaries. Like, and I,
right.
You know, yeah. I knew that that was wrong. And I remember driving back, and like, he called incessantly as I was driving back to my house. And, you know, I said to him, like, no one's ever said anything like that to me. And then again, kind of wearing me down to say like, this is what's normal. I didn't really mean it. I'm just upset. And like, I don't know, but I remember that conversation.
That brings up some memories for me too. Yeah.
Yeah.
the whole like playing it off, like it's normal. Like, well, what's the big deal? Like, and then going back and like retracing it. Wait, but this is what happened. And then you said this, and then I did this. And like, you know, that just like trying to like reiterate it in a way to where it's like, do you understand how I'm right now and how you're wrong? Like now, if I re-say it, like, you know, it's just like, no, but you called me names that like,
yes, and you didn't need to call me names.
Yeah. Oh, it's yeah. And I think the first few times I heard names was really shocking because I'd never been talked to like that either. And the same thing, it was just the boundaries were set and I just let them, let her walk all over them, you know, like,
yeah. I wish we could all go back and keep those boundaries, but I don't know. Yeah, it was
part of me is happy that I didn't though, just because, you know, I mean, knowing me as an empath, I would have run into it eventually at some point or another. So if I would have left too soon, I probably wouldn't have learned my lesson, probably would have found myself back in a situation like that, you know, and who knows, it might have been with somebody even worse. Like, I don't know, you know.
That's a valid point. That's a very positive spin. That's a good point. No, and I don't think you're wrong. Like, I like myself better than I liked myself 10 years ago. So that's
good. Cool. I agree. I was a loose cannon before. So I feel like at least having children has changed me. There's some things that have definitely matured for sure, you know. I mean, bartending in Vegas, there's yeah. I mean, I was loose. Like, there was no way, other way to put it.
So maybe it was the kids. Maybe it was the relationship. Maybe probably both.
Yeah, maybe it was the demeaning and the, you know, taking my giant head and just kind of like making it a regular size head. I don't know. Like,
yeah. No, and you know what? There is like, I think if you are, I question myself even now that I'm like, I have. Not that I question whether or not I am the narcissist. I think we've all had that moment. The more you learn, you're like, maybe I'm the narcissist. But I think we all have, you know, you tend to have these narcissistic traits. It's a spectrum. Like, and if you're completely lacking of any narcissism, then that's really not good either. Okay. Right. But I'm constantly looking at it and wondering that. But yeah, maybe it's good to get knocked into place so you didn't get more blown up. Maybe that's the case for me too.
I think that there's a healthy, everyone has a healthy amount of narcissism for sure. I'm sure you've read it too, but the more you, if you're questioning if you're a narcissist, you're not a narcissist. Like that's,
I find that interesting.
You know, because usually narcissists immediately deny it and will never accept it. And, you know, I don't know if your narcissist was ever called out for being one by you. Did you ever make that mistake?
I may have early on. I honestly don't remember, but I could totally see myself like having had my, you know, 11:30 at night Google epiphany the next day, deciding that I was going to, I could see that, but I honestly don't remember.
I mean, if you would have, I would assume that, or if it was at least made vocal enough, you would know if you called him a narcissist, you know, just because like, yeah, they don't let that die on the branch. That's something that they're going to go after, you know? So, I mean, at least from my experience, from people I've talked to and emails and people that I've, you know, there's been a couple of people I've been in communication with. I'm sure they know who they are. I made the mistake of calling my ex a narcissist, and now you know, he's looking things up, or now she's looking things up, and they're, you know, she took this test and blah, blah, blah. And now she's telling me she's not a narcissist because they had to go prove it to me by taking this, are you a narcissist test? And then they told me that I'm the narcissist. And then it's like, the same thing happened for me. And it's just like, I'm not a narcissist. I took this test and I took that test and I took this. And, you know, but I did notice that you are, I did notice, like, reading over things, that you definitely are, you've done this and you've done gaslighting and you've done projection and you've done, you know, and so they're, it's just, oh, it's just painful. And then for months after that, it just never ends. Like, you know, it's the worst thing you can do.
Now they're going to read all the same things you're reading, which, you know, leads to God knows what. So that's tough.
Exactly. That's the scary part. That was, you know, and I knew better when I said it, but I think I just lost my cool when I did it. And I just kind of like let it fly. And then I was like, oh my God, I can't believe I said that. Why did I say that? Why did I say that? And then it's like, I instantly knew it was the wrong thing to say. But then at that point I was so angry, you know, and I was trying so hard to do the gray rock method. And I was, you know, doing really well and just ignoring, but she would get to the point of blocking me in doorways, not letting me out of rooms, attacking. Making me feel like I had nowhere to go. You know, my eyes are dodgy and
the trapped feeling is,
oh my God.
Oh, that was constant. Just physically trapped, emotion, like everything. I felt trapped every place I went.
Yeah.
All the time.
Pacing the house. Just, I can't sit still because I can't be around you, but I can't be in this room because I'm afraid if I'm in this room, you're going to trap me in this room. So I'm going to keep walking in circles to, you know, avert the pain, basically. Yeah. But there's nowhere to run at the same time.
And that's how I ended up calling the cops finally, was I was physically trying to leave the house.
Yeah.
And was constantly get behind my car, make it impossible, take the keys, da da da. So I called. That was it.
And then the cops were probably like, let her leave the house. And he was like, of course I will. You know?
Oh, yeah. I didn't really want to stop her. I just, wonderful. But it's so, like, I think as I was thinking back on it, a friend who I'm still friends, I actually talked to him today, he kind of introduced us because he had worked in the same school as my ex prior to working with me, and he had mixed feelings about him. And you know, after that incident with the name calling, I think a lot of us, you know, the millennial age group, you go on Google. I'm going to Google the fuck out of this. I'm going to find the answers. So I realized that this was like emotional abuse, some of it. And I'm like, that's not good. Printed out a bunch of stuff. I go to work. I'm talking to him. And he's like, oh, that's not good. And he's, you know, he's trying to be supportive, but also, you know, I mean, you can only stick your nose in something so much.
You've got to be very careful when you're supporting someone who's being abused, because eventually they'll just get either, you know, there's a couple things that'll happen. Either me, if I had somebody that was too supportive to me, but was telling me to leave, my narcissist, I'm probably going to just stop talking to that person because then I feel guilty and shameful.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
So if they're too strong against it, I would have just ended up stopped talking to them because I would have felt so guilty that I didn't do it, or like having to go back and be like, oh yeah, I figured it out. You know, we talked it out. I didn't want that shame and that guilt.
Oh, it's shame. That's exactly what, and that I did the same thing. I slowly stopped talking to people.
Yeah.
It's my own shame. Cause I'm embarrassed. Like,
it's embarrassing. It's so embarrassing. It's like, I can't believe I'm still putting up with this. I just can't deal with it. And so I just stopped talking to those people that were like super supportive and good for me. You know,
and so messed up.
It's so twisted. It really is.
But then from the other side, now, I don't know about you, but I have, you know, I have friends who are in tough situations, and, you know, in our group of friends, they're like constantly in, like trying to like support her and telling her things and checking in on her. And I'm like, guys, that actually really doesn't matter. And like, just be there.
Right.
But she's not going to be ready until she's ready.
Right.
Period. Like, I wouldn't have listened to a damn person.
Yep.
And maybe I'm stubborn. That probably is part of it too. But
there's some stubbornness. I think that there might even be a way that one is brought up. I know me, I was brought up super religious. I think that has a lot to do with why I had so much loyalty to my situation. You say a vow, you don't break that vow, and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, the only reasons for divorce or like infidelity or this or that, like there's different things, but just like your wife's being mean to you, so what? Like, you know,
it's funny you bring up religion, because I started journaling in the end of the relationship too. And I realized like, so I converted to Catholicism. I'm like a weird person. I converted to Catholicism in my early 20s, but anyway, so, but I had like, I'm a very faithful person.
Right.
So, I mean, right. I don't necessarily love the Catholic Church, but I have a lot of faith.
Right.
So I think a huge part of it was I had this total belief and total faith that like, we should all try to be like Jesus Christ. Like, I believe that like you had to be kind and you had to be forgiving, and that is love. It's not love unless you forgive. And
right.
And
yeah, there's and a that's part of that, like Jesus's yeah. belief system and like the Sermon yes. on the Mount. And, you know, like, actually, I don't know if, because does Catholicism do the New Testament?
Yeah.
Okay. That, yeah, yeah. Maybe it's a different religion that does only Old Testament. I don't know, but
yeah, if you're Jewish, it's just the Jewish.
Oh yeah, that's what I'm sorry. Yeah, that was really stupid of me. I should have known that. But yeah. I mean, the Sermon on the Mount is like turn the other cheek and yes. you know, all these different things, and blessed is the meek and blah blah mm-hmm. blah. It's basically telling you to just, you know, take it and just mm-hmm. be forgiving and just kind of like show them through your kind deeds how to be. Mm-hmm. But that's, I mean, totally relevant if you're speaking of logical people. But when you're speaking mm-hmm. about someone with a mental disorder, it's a completely different ball game. And that kind of stuff is out the window, but you don't realize that.
No.
You know, you just have these core belief systems that, you know, if I just show them love, if I show them unconditional love,
yes.
love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, good, you know, all the different, like mm-hmm. the different levels, all these different things. And it's just like, it doesn't matter, and you want it to be reciprocated, and then like eventually you just realize it's just never going to be reciprocated. But yeah. there's a pattern that, yeah, you're right, no matter what, they're never going to come out of it unless they're ready to. And there's a denial phase, and there's an acceptance phase, and there's like mm-hmm. a discovery phase. Like, there's all these different phases that one has to go through. It's not just like because you're her friend or his friend and just be like, yo, you really need to leave her. That's not gonna cut it. No matter if you say they're super abusive, this isn't right, that's so messed up, it doesn't matter. Like, they have to go through the journey.
It's really hard to watch, I think, for love. I don't know why, it's maybe having been through it, it's not as difficult. Yeah. I wish I was able to prevent it for people. You know, yeah. teaching high school kids, I wish I could save them.
Yeah. I'm sure you probably, even at high school level, you probably see some like personalities that you're like,
yeah.
red flags in some kids.
Yeah. sure. Yeah. Yeah, they do. I do. Well, now that I know. Yeah. I mean, and I think we all get out of these things and you end up with a PhD in narcissism. Like, you read everything.
Yeah. You don't need the degree. Yeah. You don't need the degree at all.
Oh God. No. My, one of my good friends is a social worker, and probably a year and a half into the relationship with my ex, she and I were out to breakfast, and I was describing to her kind of the behaviors of my ex and like his mom and their relationship. And she mentioned, and I remember this, she mentioned cluster B.
Mm.
And I was like, I didn't know what that was. Like, I'm not a social worker, I don't know. So, you know, she just, and I asked, and she described like narcissism. So I was like, oh, narcissism. No, he's not vain. Like, no, that doesn't. And I thought about narcissism in like that classical, like grandiose sense.
Yep. That's now, what I thought. That's literally what I thought. I thought vanity. That was the first thing that popped in my head. Like, super arrogant, outgoing, like, but like, openly vain, to where everybody knew they were super vain, you know. And that's just, oh my god, my computer's going crazy. Yeah, no, I did, you're right. I thought the same thing, and I brushed it off at the time. Did you brush it off too?
Yep. Yeah, I heard her, and I'm like, no, I don't think that's great, because, you know, he's not this. Maybe his mom is, but no, that's not him,
right?
But again,
when did you discover it then? Like, did you go back and or did somebody else kind of explain it to you in a different way?
I think as things got worse over time, I'd like Google very specific questions and so it would lead me down the path. And then I got farther and farther into it before I was like, okay, no, actually this is, I was starting, or I periodically all along, I would write down conversations that we would have. I'd get back upstairs and write things down. Because I mean, I was constantly being told that I had a terrible memory.
Yep. Oh, and, yeah, I was told that too. Oh, yeah. Which is part of the gaslighting thing. That's just setting you up for gaslighting.
Yeah.
If they can convince you that your memory sucks, then they can just change the history all the time.
And that's exactly how it still works that way. I'm still like at a point where we had a conversation 3 weeks ago that he didn't say any of the things he said, just didn't happen. So now next time we're having a conversation, I'll record again, but that's an ongoing battle. But yeah, I wanted to be out of it so many times, and I just, very unfortunately, he had a traumatic brain injury at my friend's wedding. He was like a belligerent drunk. So if he drank, he couldn't cover up who he was. So all of those terrible sides of him would come out.
Yeah.
So at a friend's wedding, he was completely obnoxious, and a couple of my friends were escorting him out, and I was done at that point. Like, I was done again. Like, this was it. Fine. And he fell someplace in the city we were in, and I couldn't track him down. It took like 14 hours to find him at a major hospital. He had fallen and hit his head. So with that, it was great. I was then rolled into this cycle, and part of it was
there's a like trauma bond there of some sort.
Yeah, like the guilt, like I had let him leave on his own, and my friends were the last people to see him as they left, like they just let him go outside of the hotel.
I mean, where were you at this point in your relationship with him? Did you kind of already know who he was at this point?
It was becoming a little bit clearer. Like we weren't like crazy drinkers, but we were in our 20s, and you know, we'd go socially and then we'd drink, and it always ended terribly,
right?
Like really, really bad.
Yeah.
Because he could not just have fun and be friends like with people. He would always like, he got into a huge fight with a friend, like a month before, or a friend's husband a month before. And, so it was already a kind of a precarious situation. I was just kind of done with it. It was, but then this happens, and now I'm the only connection with his family. So I had to call the family and explain, like, he's in the ICU, he's been intubated, like all of this shit. And then I'm in it. Like, he had a bad relationship with his parents already, because they had tried to force him into counseling. When I first met him, he wasn't speaking to them, because they said they wouldn't have a relationship with him unless he sought counseling. Of course, he explained to me that it was all their fault because his mom's a terrible narcissistic person.
Yeah.
Which is partially true, I'm sure. I mean, she never treated me that way, but I can see things. But you know, so their relationship was not good. So, you know, he was in the hospital, then he was in a rehab for a few weeks. So the whole thing was probably 3.5 weeks. And he gets home, and his parents live out of state. They live, you know, 2.5-3 hours away. He doesn't have any family. So now all of a sudden I'm also a caretaker. And again, it's a sense of obligation. Like, I mean, I'm not going to dump someone who just had a head injury, even though 12 hours prior, like I wanted to.
I was going to say, how did you feel about, like, secretly, how did you feel? I'm just curious. Like,
I felt
a head injury. Were you like, ooh, was there a part of you that was like, I hope it was bad? Like, I know that sounds horrible. I know that sounds really mean, but like, I know with me, there were so many times where my ex was like, I think I have cancer. And there were thoughts inside my head, you know, you don't say them out loud, but if you've been abused for years and years and years, there's a part of me that was like, like I started fantasizing about what life would be like without her. And if she did have cancer and if she did pass, then I'm like, oh, would I have to fake like I'm sad? Because I feel like I would feel really free if this was to happen. And that's so, so dark. And it's like, they unlock the darkest parts of you because you've been like, you literally feel like you're trapped, you know? So I was just curious to know if like you had any of those thoughts.
I do now, 100% now.
Right.
I said to, you know, my best friend, my mom, I mean, the only person in my whole life that I've ever wished would die.
Yeah.
Like legit.
That's, yeah. And then, yeah. And I'm the same way. I've never, felt that.
That's true.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, just because of the damage she's doing to my kids, I still probably wouldn't care. I mean, which sounds really awful.
Totally get it.
Clearly I would never do anything to her.
No,
don't care enough about her to do something like that. But at the same time, if something was to happen, it's just kind of like,
no, I know it's a very odd place to be, to just, to feel that apathetic.
It sucks though. Like I don't ever want to feel that way towards anything or anyone. Like, anyone, that's just that's not our person. I don't think that's our personalities as empaths anyways, to like have that much resentment or hatred or anything in us, you know, but
with when the kids are small, I think it's hard.
Yeah.
To not, it's like a constant fear. Like it's just, I mean, you can do everything in your power to try to separate yourself and try to gray rock, but they're still, those are your kids. Like,
they can dangle those kids in front of you at any moment, you know, not literally, but metaphorically, and get you, you know, they will take you right out of that gray rock real fast.
Yep.
If you're living with them, you don't have any escape, you know, that's what, I mean, I know I've talked to people in the past and, you know, still do talk to people that have been trying their best to kind of maintain and make things work and try all the things that they can, you know, which is admirable because I literally did the same thing, you know. I was with my ex for what, 12 years, I think, altogether. And I felt like I needed to leave. I didn't want to leave any stones unturned before finally just kind of, you know, leaving.
So. Well, I mean, we've already slipped into the dark side of it. I mean, the only reason I left is I was at the point where I was contemplating suicide.
Yeah.
I was like, literally, I felt so trapped. And I'm not a person who'd had suicidal thoughts in my life.
Right.
But it felt like I was so trapped and there was no way out. And I felt like me being in that house made the house more toxic for the kids.
Mm-hmm.
I knew he was absolutely never going to let me, you know, take the kids. So that wasn't, I know some people have situations where the narcissists want that level of freedom to not have their kids, but he's like, he's getting a grip on them.
Yeah.
Because
if he has a grip on them, he has a grip on you.
Yeah. And and they're really his only source of anything anymore. Mm-hmm. Both of his parents are dead. His brother, he doesn't really have any relationship with, and he has pretty much no friends, which.
His friends probably rotate. I mean, he probably gets new groups of friends just like mine. You know, the only friends he keeps are those I mean, it's just whatever can fill her supply, but simultaneously. So either they're praising her all the time and that's why they're friends, or she's benefiting from them for her business or some kind of financial gain. So she'll put on that mask, you know, to make herself what she wants to make herself, you know, to them. So there is some longstanding relationships that has kind of surprised me. But then again, the more I think about it, I'm like, oh, it's because this girl's a photographer and she's a well-known photographer and she does photographs for her flower farm and brings models and does all these things. That's why she's still friends with her. Oh, this girl owns a yoga studio and has a lot of ins with other women that are into like that type of, you know, persona that she's trying to create. So of course she's going to show this best side of herself to these people. But then the ones that have just been like exclusively friends that there were no actual, you know, business related type activities from, I think there's only one friend that she has and they've kind of gone on and off and on and off. And I think that they're both kind of just as toxic as each other in different ways. I think that friend has a codependency on her, almost like a relationship with the narcissist would be. So she kind of worked herself into this you know, shame and guilt cycle, because I've seen some of the text messages between them to where now, you know, she would be like the flying monkey, quote unquote, which she's done to me, which, you know, I hate using that term, but I don't really know. I know that's a term that people are familiar with, but anyway, I'm talking too much.
No, you're not. No, this is good. I don't know where I was. The head injury. So that turned, at the time, no, I did. I felt obligated. I don't know if I would say that I didn't feel strongly about his health one way or another, but I felt obligated to be involved.
Of course. And I would have felt obligated, but I would have secretly.
I couldn't see the writing on the wall clearly
at that point. Gotcha. Either. Yeah.
And then, you know, because I was serving as caretaker, he was out of work for a while. He was able to get, you know, some disability and things like that. But that it was like four months. I mean, he was lucky that he was able to recover that fast. But I was there so much at that point. I was practically living there. So then a few months later, I moved in. So that then we got a dog. So the dog.
Tying it together. The more things you can get together.
Mm-hmm. The dog was my idea. I always wanted a dog. This is going to be so great. But I will say that in the next 2 years, it was like, I didn't leave even though I wanted to because of the dog. Like, where am I going to go? I need a rental that I can bring a large dog into. Well, I can't do that. And I can't buy right now. So, you know, I stayed for the dog. I mean, I wrote it in a journal too. I mean, it's so crazy. Yeah. But then moving and then, oh God. And then, so I moved in about a year.
I can see your anxiety just in talking about it. I'm the same way when I talk about things. Like, a lot of times people can't see my face, but I'm just like,
it's just, the more you think about how you got where you got, it's just, so about a year later, another friend in the same group of friends is getting married. It's very weird how, like, we had head injury with one wedding and then the next wedding is happening. And the night before the rehearsal dinner, his father had a massive stroke. So really bad. We drive down to where the parents live. It's like 2.5-3 hours away. Dad's not, it's not going to go well. So I am in the wedding. So I go back to be in the wedding and then turn around and drive right back. And dad dies. Now, before dad dies, he's like semi-conscious in the hospital. He appears to be cognizant, but who knows with that kind of thing, the doctors really couldn't say. He was totally nonverbal, not really responsive, but his eyes are open and he's got some movement. So my ex asks his future sister-in-law, so his brother's fiance, he asks to take her engagement ring to borrow it. He borrows the engagement ring. And when we're in the waiting room in the hospital, he asks me to put the engagement ring on and explains to me that his dad really wanted us to get married and that he wants to tell his dad that we are now engaged. At this point, like, I had said to him, I will not marry you unless we get couples counseling.
Yeah.
But his dad is about to die. And apparently this is his dad's dying wish, which I don't know.
Maybe that's even true.
Who the hell knows? Yes. Who the hell knows? So I put on this damn engagement ring. We go in, he puts my hand in his father's hand.
As a parent, like, what normal person would be like, my dying wish is to see you marry this person? Like, that's, I don't know, that just seems really far-fetched, you know?
Oh, and I mean, so much about this poor man's death is so dysfunctional with this family, so many things. But so we do that. So now before his father dies, his father dies 2 days later. We've now told his father that we are engaged to be married. We're not. So like a month and a half later, on his dad's birthday, we hike a mountain and he proposes on his dad's birthday, who just died.
A week later, you said?
About a month and a half, maybe two months. Yeah. Okay. So what am I going to do? Say no. Like, you brought me up. He's in tears. My dad loved this place. This is so it's just, I wish that I had said no.
Yeah.
But that's not who I am. I feel like
there's so many boundaries there that are crossed. Mm-hmm. And that's so manipulative on a really deep level.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Wow. Yeah, I can't even imagine what I would say. I mean, of course you're going to say, who wouldn't? I mean, you'd have to be stone cold. I mean, but I mean, you could have, like, there's ways that
we could have
done it in mm-hmm. a way where it's like, you know, it's kind of like, you know, if a dog dies and then you want to go buy another dog, it's like, why don't we wait until, let's handle this first. And then once mm-hmm. we handle this, then we'll move on to this. Like, there could have been a way to say it, but like, you're so caught up in this person and their emotions and they're crying and it's just so intense. It's like, how are you going to, like, you know, their whole world is falling apart, you know? Mm-hmm. And if you don't want to be the straw that broke the camel's back.
No. And I mean, you don't add grief to grief.
Right.
If you're a kind person.
Right.
So, yeah. So that was our engagement story.
Ugh.
Very beautiful.
Almost. It's definitely more intense than mine. Mine was weak. Mine was just a lot of shame. You know? It was like, why haven't you yet? And then her mom, like, pressure. And then her mom's like, I've got a guy, he can get a ring for you. Let's go pick out a ring. I'll buy it. You could just pay me back. You know, when you get your
taxes, no.
You just pay me back. So I'm like, okay. And so I mean, I'm like, for the last 2 years, I've been hearing about it. So I might as well just do it. I mean, I'm pretty much stuck at this point anyway. We already have a kid together, you know? And then I think it was like, I don't even remember what it was. It was just some random Saturday. I had the ring and I was like, I don't know how to do this. And like, I think it was because I didn't really feel it, you know?
Oh, totally.
And so I didn't know what to do. There's so much, every holiday's ruined. I'm sure you know that. Every holiday, mm-hmm. any big day is ruined,
yes.
You know? So it didn't, in my mind at that moment, like, I was just kind of like, I had the ring in my pocket and I was just kind of like, fuck it. And I just kind of like, she was sitting on the couch watching TV and I just kind of like, you know, gave it to her and got down on one knee and was like, hey, you want to get married? Like, I love you. You know, like, I like stumbled all my words and like anything I wanted to say was like out the window. I was so terrified, but I think I was so terrified because I knew I was going to be ridiculed no matter how it went down. But at the same time, I was feeling so much pressure. I was like, I have to do this because if I don't do this, I'm going to continue to get ridiculed. So I can't wait for the perfect moment. I've just got to do it because, like, I've got so much pressure on me, you know, from her and her mom and everyone else to like finally tie the knot. Like, I feel like she'll just be happy to get a ring after all this time. So I just kind of did it. And then I was just ridiculed forever. Anytime we'd watch a TV show,
Look
how romantic he is. Look how he proposed. Oh, look how much he cares about his woman, you know, or about a wedding or their vows or whatever it was. Like, mm-hmm. Oh man, that's so romantic. Look at him on stage. Look at him at a ball game. Look at him, you know, professing his love for his woman. I mean, you just gave it to me when you were hungover and
Did she do it like, oh, I'm just kidding around with you, like the play, like the ridicule that's kind of a joke, or was just straight ridicule?
Like, there was a lot of it was like when we were together alone, it was kind of play. It was more ridicule. When we were around other people, it was definitely more playful.
Okay. Yeah.
So when we were around other people, it was more just kind of like hinting. Like, yeah. It was little pokes. It's like, ugh, you know, this is how he proposed to me. I mean, we were just sitting around like, he's so romantic. And then everyone's like, ha 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 ha, you know, and then everyone laughs about it. And I'm just kind of like, yeah, well, you know, she says the same things to me, except in not nicer ways when we're at home, you know,
so,
but I can't say that.
When we had to pick our our wedding song. So, you know, fast forward another year, and I just remember how terribly difficult it was to pick a, like, you know, the song that the couple dances to.
Mm-hmm.
It was so hard for me because every single song I would look at the lyrics and say,
that's not him.
And yeah, it was constantly me saying, like, I'd say, but you don't feel that way about me. We're not going to use that song. That's not how you feel about me. Cause I knew that you didn't feel that way about me. Right. And I will say that to you. And he'd be like, no, that I do. I'm like, no, what you did yesterday says that you didn't. And that alone, I think back on that experience and how hard it was to come up with a stupid love song to dance to with this person was literally almost impossible. We ended up picking a random song that neither of us had ever heard before as the song, because it had to be something so separate. And to contrast that with, like, the relationship I've now been in for like 2.5 years, every damn song I hear on the radio, I'm like, every song, I'm like, isn't this nice? I love every single song, and this would be a great, like, not that I'm getting married and meeting soon, but
right.
I just, like, it's just so, so different, and I don't know. It was just another thing I should have noticed, and I didn't, but.
Yeah. Oh, no, I mean, you, I think that you're so close to the sun, you know, you can't really see anything else. I mean, it's impossible. And it's such a web of interwoven traumas and everything else that, I mean, I had similar experiences with my wedding for sure. So,
yeah. People
thought that I was crying because I was just so in love with her at my vows, but like my vows, like, I couldn't think of shit to say about her for days and days. And mm-hmm. She wanted something that was really thought out, really planned out, even birthday cards or Christmas cards. Like if it was some long heartfelt message inside, but mm-hmm. I got to a point where I couldn't buy birthday cards or Christmas cards or anything. They were just blank.
100%.
I would go to blank inside cards because they're like, all the messages were such bullshit.
Yes, because I'd be lying to you. I can't lie to you.
Right. So I'm just going to get a blank inside card, tell you that I care about you, you know? And I feel like the messages got shorter and shorter and shorter as time went on because I realized more and more and more, like, fuck it. Like, there's nothing I can do that's mm-hmm. going to make you, like, you know, care. Like, I could write the longest heartfelt message and it doesn't matter. Like, so this is what you get. It got to a point where it's like, Happy Mother's Day. heart sign, you know, like not even writing out I love you, just like a heart. Like
that's what happens. I think, you know, we start out having genuine love.
Right.
And then they erode it.
Yeah.
I will never feel guilty about what I tried to do. It seems like you feel like you tried everything. You try and you are trying to be genuinely loving, like to get to a point where you erode that love. Well, I don't think the fault falls on us. No,
it doesn't. And that's the thing. I mean, I see that clearly and I hope other people see that. That's why, you know, why I want more people to come on and talk.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, where are you? So when you left, how did you leave? Like, was it a big deal? Was it like a big to do, or was he just kind of like surrendered to it and was like, okay, see you later? Like, what was the straw that broke the camel's back?
Well, it took about a month. I would say a month and a half of negotiation. A big part of it is, like I said, I got to a point where I was like suicide. And then I realized, I'm like, well, if you're willing to commit suicide,
right,
you're willing to throw everything out the window.
Yeah.
So I think I got to a point where I was quite honest, and I would say it all the time. I would say, I don't give a fuck. I would say that to him. I don't give a fuck anymore, because I felt like, and this is one of the most painful parts of my life. I still feel like I can't protect my children.
Yeah.
And as a parent, that is, most people will never understand what that feels like, but I genuinely don't feel like people say, oh, I would die for my kids. Yep, I could die for my kids and it still wouldn't help them. It right. really, like, there's literally nothing you can do. And that part is the worst. So I got to
a point where I could kill for my kids, but you could kill them for your kids, but it right. still wouldn't help them.
It still wouldn't help. And
you're going to jail and they're going to have issues for the rest of their
yes,
life.
They're in foster care. Doesn't matter. It's like, that's the thing I think most people really don't understand. Like no. you get in with these kinds of people, like it is not about how much you love your kids and how far you're willing to go.
Yeah.
Like there is nowhere to go. You can't. Yeah. Like you're stuck in this shitty situation.
Yep.
So that's, I mean, ultimately that's where I was. I think when he realized that I didn't give a fuck about the money, about what he said to other people about me, what other people thought about me, about anything.
Yeah.
Like I was just going to, I'll sort it out after. I had to leave.
Yeah.
Like it had to happen. So I think when he realized that I was willing to just,
I mean, you were pretty much in so much of a deep depression that like even his gaslighting or whatever just wasn't working on you at that point because you just didn't care.
No. And I mean, in some ways that was the most powerful I'd felt in the entire relationship because to not care, that's all, they use your own care against you the whole time.
Right. That's their supply.
Mm-hmm.
And just sucking out of that energy mm-hmm. of, you know, caring.
Yep.
Oh man, and that's pretty powerful.
So yeah, that's, I mean, so I left, my parents helped me to get a house. Well, a duplex, I'm still in it now. So that I was in a situation where I had 3 bedrooms so I could get my kids. Cause I knew that would be part of what honestly, since I was pregnant with my first child, that was the first time I left. I left for 2 days, I think, at that point. He'd thrown all my stuff off the deck one night. so I had left.
Sounds accurate.
Yeah. so since then, like the threat had always been like, you're not stable emotionally, you're not stable financially, I will get the kids. So mm-hmm. that was always the threat. Mm-hmm. So once I got to the point where I was like, you can't use that threat anymore, I'm still gonna leave. It's that important. Like dead parent or living parent who doesn't live with them, probably living parent who doesn't live with them, that's a better option.
Right.
So yeah, I left and it took a couple months and it was really, really hard. But.
I mean, who did you lean on?
So, I mean, both of my parents were extremely supportive. Like he attempted to triangulate my mom a little bit right in the beginning, but she didn't buy it. Like no one really bought any of his shit. I will say that he's not socially savvy enough to be that kind of narcissist that can really, like my friends never liked him, you know? So I had all of my friends that supported me. My parents were very supportive financially in particular, because at that point, like I had nothing.
Yeah.
We had a joint bank account. I mean, and he'd clear it out every time I would say I was leaving, he'd clear out the bank account, which was great. I bounced a check once at daycare. That felt really cool.
felt really cool.
The poor lady who's taking care of my kid is like, your check bounced. I'm like, oh God.
I bet I know what happened.
Yep. but they supported me. I was also like, so I mentally left that relationship a long time ago.
Same.
It was just, it was a shell at that point. So by the time when I had already said, you know, I'm planning to leave, when I was in, we were separated, but living in the same house situation, I had started to reconnect with a person who I'm now in a relationship with. And that person has been very, very helpful. I will say, I mean, in the beginning, I will say, you know, he's also got an ex, but a very healthy person. And I took a lot of advice about how to do it well and do it in a healthy manner. it took me a while to realize that that was impossible with what I'm dealing with.
Right.
But yeah, so all of those, pretty much everyone in my life was very supportive. I was very lucky.
Truly envy people that have like healthy exes.
Mm-hmm.
Where they actually get along and they're like, we're fine with each other. Like
they're friends.
We just didn't work out. It's like, oh my God. Like I have so many exes that I could have been like that with, that I had kids with. And it's just, oh, like the worst one of the whole pile. Like I had to like have babies with, like, you know, I love my kids dearly. I just,
of course.
It's just a tough, you know, spot, you know?
It is. So yeah, so that was that. I mean,
so your parents got you, so did you already have the place when you moved out, or like did you stay with them for a little while? Or
I didn't leave until I'd locked this down. So I was living in, like, you know, a lot of people have described the scenario like you're in a separate room, you don't eat in the same place, you don't watch TV in the same place. Like I did debate living in the basement of that house.
Yeah.
But we'd still have a common kitchen, and it wasn't, and then I had to move all my stuff, and I was like, well, we're still going to be forced to interact.
Yeah.
So yeah, we were apart for a long time before I actually moved, and then I moved right in here. And yeah. So
he knew that you were looking for a place. He knew that there was a deal going on for the new place for you while you were still staying there.
Yes.
And
yes.
He didn't try to manipulate and guess. I mean, I feel like he would have, but was he trying to hoover you in and try to keep you from doing that move?
Yes. Yes. There were lots of attempts. I mean, I was resolute by the time, like, this was like 2 years coming. Like, yeah. I pretty much made up my mind on New Year's Eve and then 6 months later, I told him that it was it. So I was pretty hard and fast on my decision at that point. So there was really nothing he could do.
I would have been terrified staying there, like staying with him, like for your safety. You know, were you worried about your safety?
Yes. Yes. And there were many times that's the point where I ended up calling the cops for the first time. You know, I was never like, no matter what would happen, I don't know. It's the embarrassment. There's so much embarrassment there. Yeah. I didn't want people to know that I was dealing with that.
I mean, I feel like even being like someone, like almost a public figure, you're, you know, being a teacher and stuff like that. Like, you know, there's a lot of pressure. There's a lot that comes with that, that you don't want those types of things getting out there.
No, I mean, he would, if it came, one of us would lose a job.
Yeah.
Depending on who's at fault. So that's a huge problem too. So yeah, it was tough, but you deal with what you deal with. And then I got out and that was hard. And within 2.5 months, then we had a 50-50 parenting schedule. So that was good. I mean, he went through two lawyers. Well, he went through three lawyers. The first lawyer, she didn't last that long. I don't know if he fired her or she fired him, kind of thing.
Hmm.
He's very difficult, as you would imagine, very demanding. You know how they are.
Mm-hmm.
The second lawyer was a very much more experienced lawyer. So he's the one who actually took us through most of the negotiation of the agreement. And oftentimes, you know, we'd be sitting there and he'd like, I think a lot of the times he was explaining to him, like, you're not going to get that. You need to bend. And I don't think he liked that very much, but it did, because it was a much older gentleman with a lot of experience. He did seem to listen.
Right.
Whereas the first woman was like a young woman where I feel like he felt that he could just muscle her. And then the third lawyer, so the second lawyer decided not to work with him anymore after a while. Understood. Yeah, I know what that meant. And then the third lawyer is another young woman, and she's the one that we actually went to court with. And even the day we went to court, I mean, he was going on about some absurdity of, like, he knew something and he wanted it to be written into the agreement by hand at the courthouse, but he wouldn't say what it was because there was some kind of manipulation to the taxes that he thought he was going to get me. And his lawyer's like rolling her eyes, and she doesn't know what to do with him because she couldn't control him.
Right.
There was nothing she could do. But yeah, so he went through three lawyers in that process. You said that
you've actually gone to court and had to sit in court and go through that whole process. I mean, did you have to go through the process of like him accusing you in front of, you know, like, was it like a back and forth thing? Like she's done this and she's done that, or is it just very, for you, has it been very matter of fact, you know?
So the entire thing was negotiated pretty much outside of court.
Right.
It took forever. And most of the money was mine because my lawyer is writing it. My lawyer is editing it when he would just say no.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we'd ask, what section are you saying no to? So that all happened outside of court. And then it was probably like 10 months between the beginning of negotiation and the day we walked into the courtroom. You literally present it to the judge. Judge just looked up at us. Do you both agree? We nod our heads, and that's the end of it. That was it.
Yeah.
I don't think, you know, there's no justice in this. And I think that's the hardest thing for anyone to understand. Like friends, they're like, how is it? He can't behave like this. This isn't like, why is this allowed? Like it's not really about justice. There is no justice.
I think there's a pro and con to going to court with the narcissist, because I feel like they realize that they can't control everything and they can't manipulate mm-hmm. the system like they can manipulate other people in their lives. So I feel like that's a good point, but then they also see what they can and can't get away with certain things. And so then they're just kind of like, oh, well, I can work within the confines of the law and still fuck with you.
Yep.
And I know that, like, even though it's documented, I know that there's nothing that can be done about it. Like I can still be a complete asshole and still do things. And there's not really much you can do other than, you know, take it.
Yeah, you file for contempt and it costs you a lot of money.
Right.
And then it's just, they're told they have to follow the agreement. Like, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I know that the last episode with Trish, that she was saying, like, she wishes she went to court. But I think that in her situation, she's also dealing with a lot more money. You know, I wasn't really trying to get money. I just wanted a fair shake to the house that we were living in, which I didn't get, but I didn't care.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think for me, it's more or less like, I just know that my entire relationship with her, you know, since the beginning has been, you know, like what she can get out of people, what she's gotten out of me, what she's gotten out of her grandfather, what she's gotten out of her mother, what she's gotten out of her father, like all these different people in her lives that have basically just like been a constant financial supply for her, where she just kind of dipped into the well and pulled out gold, like, and just kind of been continuously handed things and just kind of like cried about it and whined about it and bitched about it. And if you don't do it, then the next thing you know, it's just like, shame on you, shame on you, shame on you for not, you know, taking care of me. Why are you not supporting me? Why are you not doing these things? You know, and if you go to do anything like getting a haircut, getting new shoes, that even though you haven't bought shoes in 2 years, like you're ridiculed forever, you know. So it's just, you know, she's always dipped into the pool of money. So I think for me, a big part of it was like, I knew that she was going to fight over money. You know, she's already kind of showed that when I first moved out. I mean, ours was way more dramatic, even though it was coming. I feel like she knew it was coming. I was sleeping in the fucking basement it was crazy. I mean, like our basement isn't finished. I mean, it's kind of finished. It's not like a dungeon, you know. I mean, it's okay. But it wasn't livable, you know. And she was like, well, you could just, you know, we could just not be married and you can stay down there and we can still raise the kids together. And, you know,
I got that one too. Yeah.
Towards like, oh, what's wrong with this? Like, let's just stay married for the kids. And like, we don't have to like be intimate. We could date other people. Like we could, you know, you can create your own space in the basement. And like,
yeah, I was gonna, he offered me an open relationship, an open marriage. I was like, when have I ever wanted that?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I'm just like, no, that sounds awful. So then you could like, if I started dating somebody, you could just ridicule them and like tell me all the things that suck about them and like ridicule me. And you know, like it's just like, I know where that's going. Like that wasn't even a thought, really. Like I thought like 2 seconds into the future on that, and I'm like, yeah, no. Like yeah. That doesn't make any sense. But in their own head, I mean, they just come up with all these scenarios to still kind of keep control over you. But I mean, yeah, the I think the whole point there was just kind of like, yeah, when I left, it was just like going through the court system. I was done. If it wasn't for my sister, I was done. You know, yeah. Like, she was just kind of like, trust me, you're going to regret it. Like, if you don't fight for it, you're going to regret it. Get a lawyer, do this, do that, you know? And I was just kind of like, I don't care. Like, I don't care about any of it. I just want what's fair, you know? And she's like, but what you're getting right now isn't fair. Like,
yeah,
she wants to go out with her friends. You guess who's there? You're there. She wants to go do work on this or that. Like, you're there. Like, every time you're off work, you're there. You're watching the kids. She's showing up at 2 a.m. and kicking you out of the house. And then you go back to your apartment. And that's what was happening, you know, at first. Yeah. And I would do it for the kids. And she was,
of course, you know,
dangling that carrot over my head of the kids, saying like, you know, you were there for them for so many years and now you're not there for them. And shame, shame, shame on you. And you know, I remember sleeping on the couch, waking up at like literally like 2 or 3 a.m. with her just being like, okay, buddy. Okay, pal, pack your stuff up. Let's go, buddy. Get the hell out. You don't live here. Get out. You know, it's like, she's like drunk, like showing up at 3 a.m. Yeah. Like treating me like complete dog shit after like bending over backwards. Then I've got to get up at 8 a.m. to go to work. So then I've got to drive, you know, 40 minutes back to my house and then like somehow try to get some kind of sleep and then wake up and get ready and go to work. And there were nights also that she would never come home. She just wouldn't come home. And I had to open at like, you know, the stores at like 8 o'clock in the morning or 8:30 and she wouldn't show up until 7:45 and I had no work clothes with me. So then I'd show up to my work late, you know, so I'd have to drive home and drive just completely inconsiderate. Sorry.
Yeah, but they use the kids. Yeah, you're right. They use the kids as this. I mean, I think I keep hearing, and I've heard for, I don't know, 3.5 years now, the word bailing, that I bailed on the marriage. I bailed on the kids.
Yep.
Like, and I just every single time, no, I did not.
Mine is abandoned.
I left you. I did not leave the children.
Right. Yeah. Mine is abandoned. You know, the kids feel abandoned. You've abandoned us. You've abandoned the family. And you know, and I know she has her own issues with abandonment as well, you know, from her father and everything else. So I know abandonment has always been a huge issue with her. So I've definitely abandoned her.
Yeah.
Not that she did anything wrong. She did nothing wrong. So.
Oh, it's terrible. But yeah.
What points that you wanted to go over today?
I don't know. I don't know. I think we've already kind of, we've danced around everything in this. I think I found like for myself that after I got to that, I don't give a fuck place.
Mm-hmm.
And then picked up the pieces and then kept walking forward and then figured out a new life. Like I think, you know, to people who are still in the thick of it, I think there is hope, you know, that there is like, you start to recognize like the small freedom, like not having to have a conversation and a negotiation about dinner. Like I just cook dinner and I love that. I just like, just, there's so many things that are like, are so freeing. Yeah. And I have like, once I had my kids, like I'm a single mom with a 1-year-old and a 3-year-old, like that's a lot. And yet it was easier than being married to that person. I had more free time then.
Yeah.
And I don't mean in the sense of like only 50-50 parenting, like in those 2 to 3 days that the kids were with me, I was still able to accomplish more.
Right.
Because I'm not carrying the burden of all of his needs and his wants and his feelings and being responsible for all of it all the time. Because it's just the kids and I, and now we've just functioned. So
I'm the same way. When I have my kids, it's just, it's always just so peaceful. Even when they like, I mean, I feel like they hold a lot of anxiety just because they have to live with her, you know, a significant amount of time too. But when I have them, it's just chill. You know, they even expressed that to me last week, you know, when I'm with you, I'm just relax. Like, we don't really do a lot, but, you know, we do, and we do. We go for like hikes and stuff like that. But yeah. Like, I think, you know, he means, my older son specifically means like, we don't do a lot because he's not having to, you know, do all the chores for the farm, you know, their flower farm and everything else right. that you've got going on. And I'm sure she's kind of utilized him as like the new role to, you know, the new yeah. caretaker role to feed her supply, which sucks.
Yeah, and you have to worry about that.
Yeah, I know. I've been worrying about it a lot.
I know. You didn't need to be told that.
No, I'm sorry. Yeah, no,
I know.
It's definitely something that has been brought up to me, you know, by multiple people, like, you know, be careful of him, you know, your yeah. older son. And
the older child, yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, no shit. Like, I know, like, I see it every week. I have to unscrew his brain from all the manipulation and try to get him to just think straight again. Like, he's just so uptight. There's so many times we get in the car and he just wants to yell at his brother, mm-hmm. you know, just like, he's just this ball of anxiety. I just kind of have to put my leg on, you know, my hand on his leg and just be like, hey, you're with me. Calm down. You know, just.
That's really great that works.
Yeah.
That, I think, like, if that is working, just yeah. a reminder and like, that's.
It is. I make sure that I, you know, that he looks at me and I'm just kind of like, we're good. You know, mm-hmm. like, you're with me. We're not going to yell. We're not going to freak out. Like, everything's fine. Let's take a breath mm-hmm. and just be chill, you know, and I'll just keep my hand on his leg until he just, you know, and he will, and he'll breathe and he'll do breathing exercises, just kind of like, okay, you know, just yep. kind of breathe it out a little bit, you know, and then I'll just kind of, you know, rub his back a little bit and like, we're good, man. Like, you know, we're loose. We keep it loose. Let's have fun. Let's be chill. Like, you know, I mean, we can get serious when we have to get serious. If we need to talk about things, we can, but you know, just this yelling at your brother because he said something you don't like, and then he yells, then it's just back and forth. Like, hey, when you're with me, we're good. Like, we don't have to do this. And like, maybe that's the wrong message. Maybe it's not. I mean, I feel like it's important to stress it just because I'm having to counter what she's saying to them about me, you know?
So you don't, I'm very concerned that I see budding narcissistic traits in my daughter. So you don't see that at all with your kids yet, or hopefully not at all, frankly, for you.
I think I see, I don't know what I see. I just see my sons being my older son specifically. My younger son, I think, is just like, he's more like me. Mm-hmm. I really do think my younger son's more like me. And I think that eventually that's going to play a big role in him getting more shit from her.
Yeah.
Later on, but I think he's still at an age now where it's not as bad. But I mean, she's mentioned it many times, you know, before I even moved out, that he's more like me. Also, he looks more like me, apparently, according to other people, you know, and that's always been a big thing for her. Anytime anyone would be like, oh my God, he looks so much like his father, you know, she would freak out. You know, mm-hmm. I'm sure you're familiar with that. I'm sure you've gotten that too, where if, like, they say, you know, your kids look more like you, then he gets all pissed off. Like, yep. It's just a competition. Everything's a competition. I don't know how many times it was just like, I can't believe they would say that he looks more like you. He totally doesn't look more like you. Have you seen his eyes? Have you seen pictures of mine? And then she'd go and dig up pictures of her as a child, dig up pictures of her grandfather, of her mother, and be like, look at that nose. Look at that nose. Look at those eyebrows. Look at this. Look at that. I'm like, okay. What, you know, like, yep. I know what I see. I remember my pictures. Like, I know, like, I mean, multiple people saying this, they're not just saying this, like, they see it, but whatever, like, you want to make it a competition? Yeah, I can see how they look, you know, he looks like you, whatever. Like, it just, shut up. Like, why are you digging yes. up pictures? Oh, it's so stupid. But anyway, yeah, I think that my older son is having just tolerance issues and patience issues. Mm-hmm. And I think that he is developing a little bit of the vanity thing, you know, mm-hmm. like the, I think part of it is just being a teenager, but the other part of it, I think, is that she's really critical of other people.
Yes.
You know, really critical. Like, you go out to, you know, even for a drive, and I just, you know, she would just criticize people, the way they drive, the way they look. If somebody's walking down the street, like, what's that person wearing? Oh my God, look at them. Like, where are they going? Like, there's always something to say. You know, you go to a wedding, everyone's having a good time, and she's just there critiquing, like, the dresses and critiquing this and critiquing that. And like, oh my God, why would they wear those shoes? Why would they put the groomsmen in those ties? Like, oh, they look awful. Why is that girl wearing a backless dress? Like, she looks like such a slut. Like, just saying all these horrible things about people.
Just no joy. No joy.
And I'm just like, let's just have fun. I'm here to have fun. And then it's just like, oh, she looks like, who's that? Like, and if I would talk to somebody for more than 5 seconds, I'm ridiculed, like, for not giving her the attention. And it's just, it was just like a constant stressor. And I'm just kind of like, I got to a point where I didn't care. You know, I just knew it was coming. I knew that there was going to be some, you know, pushback no matter what I did. I didn't want it to happen. I didn't know how it was going to happen, but I knew it would, you know? Yeah. So, I mean, but I see those types of traits in my older son, when he talks about like video games and different things. And it's like, oh, why does this person have to do this dance when he like snipes me in this game? Like, why does this person have to do this or that? Like, oh, that's so lame. Like, they're such a loser. And I'm just like, dude, what are you talking about? Like, you don't have to make fun of people, like, for whatever skins they pick in Fortnite or whatever, you know, the way they choose to show their emojis or emotes. I'm so old.
I have no idea what you're talking about, so you're fine.
It's okay. No, it's just random things in like video games. Yeah. I didn't know any of it either, but I chose to like invest myself in his reality because it's important to him. I don't play him with him. He begs me to, and I try to, and it's just like, I suck at this too much, but I'll watch you. Like, I'll watch you. Like, you know, because I want to know what's going on in your life, but he just sits there and just ridicules and criticizes other people on YouTube videos and other things. And I'm just kind of like, you got to be careful with that. Like, you just take a step back. Like, oh, okay, you don't like the way they said something? Like, that's fine. You don't have to like the way they said it, but like, why are you being so harsh? Like, you don't need to be that harsh, you know? And I think he realizes that, like, he'll come out of it and he'll be like, you know what? I'm sorry. I am being too harsh. And like, part of me just wants to be like, you know what? It's not your fault. Your mom sucks. Like, the reason you're like this is because your mom's like this and she ridicules everyone. So you feel like you're getting that acceptance from your mom by ridiculing people as well, because she'll just jump right in with you. And like, you both can have like a bitch fest about stuff. Right. And that's not the way I communicate with you. Like, that's, you, I don't say that to him, obviously, but that's kind of the, you know, that mindset of just like this hate. You just, it's kind of spewing hate. And I feel like it's, you know, unnecessary. And so I'm kind of like I said, I'm just unbucking his brain basically every time I'm with him, you know? So.
Every little bit helps. I mean, yeah. I worry about my daughter. I worry about her a lot, but that's an entire conversation. That's a separate one. But.
Yeah. And we got time, you know. Do you ever feel like you see different things in the personalities, or is it too young still?
Well, she's 6 now, and I definitely do feel I'm really, really worried. I got her into play therapy. He agreed to it because he thought it was about his mom's death, which that also happened after I decided to leave. So there was a lot with that as well. Both of his parents passed away. I got her into play therapy when she was 4. And then with COVID, you know, play therapy over a computer with a small kid is not doable. So yeah, there's a lot of issues with lying, a lot of lying, lack of empathy. I worry a lot. We try to have conversations, and sometimes she comes around, but I didn't really notice it. I knew she was always like, kind of, kids have personalities. I mean, people are born as they are. And, you know, she wasn't ever like a cuddly kid, I guess. And I didn't realize that she really wasn't until her brother came along and I saw his personality is very different. And as he's gotten older, he's now 4, so it's 4 and 6 now, I've realized that she has some pretty significant gaps in empathy for a kid. Like, if her brother is able to achieve that level of empathy, like, he can come, or he'll come, you know, he'll have a fit, he'll throw something, he'll be mad.
Right.
And then he'll come around and he'll genuinely feel sorry. He'll feel sorry that he did. He's sorry for the person. She very rarely gets to that point. It's frightening, actually. And I don't know. I don't know what to do. Cause I, at the same time, you know, we go to therapy. I don't want to say too much. I don't want to say really anything.
Yeah. Once do you ever talk to the therapist one-on-one about those? I mean, I'm sure you do, right?
I did. Well, yes, I did get a couple sessions. Well, not a couple, a couple minutes, because with the therapist, every single time the kids went to therapy, he would insist on being there and would come into the room every time.
Oh, overbearing.
Yes, yes. He, the kid, literally the children could not go to therapy without him in the room, because he's very important.
And then the therapist allowed him to be in the room during the therapy?
Yes. I don't know. Maybe now that she's six, if we can ever get back in there.
I know my kids have therapists. They have a play therapist, and the parents are not in the room during the therapy sessions.
I need a better therapist then, because but I think part of the reason he allowed it is because he felt like he was able to control the situation so much.
Right.
So then I wonder if he would allow me to get a new therapist for them post COVID.
Yeah.
It's another thing on the list. I also think my daughter probably has, some kind of maybe ADHD. I'm not exactly sure. But there's little, like, you know, there's definitely something there. She's getting in trouble at school. Definitely struggles to attend to things. And, I figure let's get her evaluated. Worst case scenario, I'll spend the money. I'll pay for the evaluation. I wasn't even going to ask to split it. I'll pay for it. Let's just go with it. Like, I know the kindergarten teacher has expressed some concerns. I have some concerns. He, of course, doesn't see any of these behaviors and doesn't understand, but said, you know, I'd be willing. Okay, great. Yeah, you look into it and you let me know. But then I pissed him off, because I didn't do what he wanted to do, like a week and a half later, about something completely unrelated. And then, of course, it was, no, you may not get her tested anymore. I was told that since it is genetic, I had to get myself diagnosed with ADHD first, and then he would allow for her to go through the process. So I don't know. I don't know. It's one of those things. It's just too much to really.
So many hurdles. Yeah. It's pick your battles, you know?
Yeah.
One step at a time, really.
Yeah. So, but yeah, I worry about my daughter a lot. I don't know. It's tough, because I mean, as much as, you know, there are so many ways that you can model empathy and talk about it.
If you don't have it, you don't have it. You can emulate it.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what narcissists do. They just emulate it.
I just teach her how to be more manipulative.
Right.
So it's really, really tough. And you know, her little brother struggles with her a lot, I think, because of that. And then I also, of course, like, I'm self-critical. I'm constantly looking at myself and I'm like, okay, am I projecting or whatever, like, my fear onto her now?
Right.
Like, is this real? Am I just seeing something that's typical 6-year-old behavior? Right. And like, I'm just, I don't know.
It could be like a, yeah. You know, I mean, I don't know. I know. I feel like my son, my older son, when he was that age, was a little bit less empathetic as well.
Yeah. And every kid,
I don't know if it was to an alarming degree or not. I remember at the time feeling like he was in his own world. And I remember feeling at the time that he was lying more. He doesn't really lie as much now. Well, maybe not to me. I feel like he's getting more and more aware and more cautious of what he says to his mom. There's conversations I have with him about his friends. And I'm like, do you talk to your mom about this stuff? And he's like, oh, hell no. He's like, oh, no, I would never. You know, I'm like, I'm just curious. Like, sometimes I'm just curious. I don't ever call her out on it. I don't ever question it. I'm just curious to know, like, what the relationship is there, you know, but I feel like he's becoming more empathetic lately.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good.
But I don't know. I feel like those were some concerns I had when he was, you know, six-ish.
Yeah.
But Yeah, so it might be something that they'll just kind of like start to figure out. Like, I feel like a lot of 6-year-olds, they're their own show. You know, they're in their own TV show, they're in their own world. Now they've got like YouTube at their fingertips and all kinds of stuff. Like, you know, like they, it's more like the Truman Show now than it ever was. Like, you know, I feel like, I don't know, there might be something. I don't know. I feel like I've talked a lot about this. Yeah, we've talked a while. So. I don't know if you want to, you know, if there's more things that you think of that you want to go over at some point, if you want to just kind of call back or, you know, set up another time with an update.
We can chat another time. I can talk about more of the contemporary tackling of issues.
Either that, or if there's like certain things that like were really, you know, things that were probably the biggest, you know, things that pressed you and pushed you the furthest, you know. I mean, between you and I still haven't talked about like the sexual side of things, you know. Because there's a lot of sexual manipulation and abuse and everything else that goes on. I just haven't brought myself to a point where I can physically go there or mentally go there and just talk about it. But I feel like I need to. For the podcast, I feel like it would be really helpful for people. I just can't go there.
I will eventually, I'm not there yet. Yeah, because you hear, I mean, a couple of the groups that I'm in on Facebook, you'll hear like the nightmarish stories, and like, and then you start to think about it and you're like, oh, actually, you know, mine wasn't that much better.
Right.
You know, it makes you cringe.
Yeah.
And then you think, I mean, and then, you know, the other side of it is, of course, and I honestly thought that I had become asexual. Like, I just didn't care.
Yeah.
And then realize, actually, no, I'm not asexual, but
you just went through so much trauma and abuse that you just shut off.
It's sad.
I guess if you want to come back on or talk about whatever, or if there's things that start to, you know, fester or boil up that you want to kind of, you know, revisit. I thought it was a really good conversation. I thought we like kind of went over a lot that I haven't really talked about. And then just, you know, just from your perspective and everything else, I feel like because we have a lot of similarities, it was more of a natural flow. So I'm really excited. This was great. I know I do have one person that I recorded. I talked to Matt earlier, but we got our times wrong. Because he's on the East Coast. On the West Coast.
West Coast.
So he's in like the Pacific Northwest area. So he said 4:00 and I said 4:00, but he meant 4:00 my time, or his time, which would have been 7:00 my time. I'm like, I already have something going on at 7:00. So he was able to talk to me at that time. You know, he's like, I just dropped the kids off so we can talk. But we just literally just chatted. I didn't record anything.
Yeah. His story just breaks my heart.
Oh my God. It's so intense. Yeah. We had a good conversation today about just like his upbringing and his background and his childhood. And that was really, even that was heartbreaking. I mean, there's a lot that he's gone through, and you know, he's so strong, honestly, like the shit he's putting up with, and he's just like, no nonsense. He's like, nope, content. No. Nope, let's do it. Nope, we're going back again. Nope, we're doing it. Like, he's not pulling, letting him get away with anything. And I'm like, wow, you're so strong. Like, you know?
Yeah, no, that's, well, I just can't, my well would be dry.
Yeah.
Emotionally and financially, my well would be dry.
And I don't really know who his support is. I mean, I guess I need to ask him that. Like, who's supporting, you know, maybe just friends? Because I feel like his parents are both dead. You know, his sister, he barely talks to. So I don't feel like he has any close family. So I'm just, I don't know. He's just pulling this strength out of thin air, man. This guy's just a Superman. he's not putting up with anything.
His situation is.
It's dire. I mean, I don't feel like it is as relatable because it's so extreme, but at the same time, I feel like maybe that's just my own situation, but I mean, yeah, I feel like it's definitely relatable to others out there, but
I mean, you hear the nightmarish, I don't know if you're in a lot of like the Facebook kind of groups and things, like there, like it is unbelievable, yeah, like what people have to put up with. And again, like that the courts just don't say, never mind my problems.
Yeah. I mean, I have an Instagram page for the podcast, but I haven't done much with it again because I'm going through the court system and I'm like still kind of terrified of like, you know, her finding it or anything like that. So I haven't gone too deep into social media, but yeah, there's people on there that's like, there's this woman that was like literally like brought to within inches of her life. A guy choked her out and he had like all kinds of like child pornography on his computer, like just really, really horrible things that were happening.
And they can't save their kids from these people. What the hell?
And then she gets her kids taken away because she like brought it up, and then like she ratted him out. And like when she found all the stuff on the computer, when she found out this was happening, and then like she finds out her child's being abused, you know, by this man. And then she goes to the police to report it, and then they take away the kids, and then she can't get her kids back. And it's just like, oh my God, you know, like, and it's, and she gives her whole story. Like, I mean, she's like no holds bars, like telling his name, telling everything, like every news report, like, I guess it's like making news in different like areas in her local area. But I mean, cause it was a pretty big ring, I guess. And he was kind of like the ringleader of a lot of like really dark stuff. Like on the dark web, and it's just, it's insane. That story just blows my mind. But I guess she's able to see her kid now with visitation and stuff like that, but it's just kind of like, oh, and there's just no, like, you can't, you're taking away, like you did the right thing and your kids are getting, you know, taken away from you for it.
Yeah. And that I think, honestly, one of the hardest things for me is that other people in my life who love me and support me will never fully, because they don't have a PhD in narcissism, and I don't want them to, because I don't want them to ever, like, but they really can't understand like all of that. And I don't want to spend all my time like telling these stories, because, and sometimes they come out like, I'll be like, oh, this lady, she just got killed, I can't believe, like, da da da, because I, and you don't want to talk about it, but they don't, they don't understand how nuts it is, because you want to have faith as an outsider, you want to have faith in a justice system that will take care of kids,
right?
Yeah,
right. And I feel like they protect parents' rights more than they do children's,
totally,
way too often. And I think that's the hard part. They're too concerned with like making sure that everything's fair between mother and father, when sometimes it just legitimately shouldn't be.
Yes.
Like they don't take that into consideration, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess you can't get it right every time, but I mean, unless there's physical evidence, which I've even brought forth, physical proof. I have physical proof, and it still doesn't matter, you know? Like, then it's like, okay, here's this bullshit restraining order that we'll give you for like on a temporary basis until you come up with another agreement. And then we're going to dissolve this restraining order once you come up with an agreement. Now you're both guilty. Now you both can't do these things. So don't attack each other physically. Like, that's not even the part I'm worried about. I'm not afraid of her at this point coming after me with a machete or something. I don't want her verbal lashings, you know? Yep. She's got a sharp tongue and she knows how to use it. And, you know, I just want to be as far away as I can. But anyway, all right.
Okay.
I'll keep rambling.
We can just keep going. We keep going.
Now we're just turning into a bat. It's going downhill for me.
Yes, it is. Yes, no.
It was really good to talk to you. I'm really happy that we did this. So we got to do it again. Yes, I mean, honestly, like whenever you want to. So.
Okay.
That wraps up this week of my episode for Surviving a Covert Narcissist, my conversation with Risha. I really appreciated her coming on. She seems like an amazing person. I just had a really good time conversing with her. Hope to have her on again. I will speak to you guys next week. I appreciate everyone that's listening, everyone that's reaching out to me. You guys are amazing. Have a great week, and I hope to be speaking again to you guys soon.